Are you that guy who sits in his car and refuses to go in the house till he hears the end of what's happening on Lifeline? Yep, thought so.
Grateful for your willingness to join the conversation here, and thank you for listening all across upstate New York, Buffalo, Rochester, also northwestern Pennsylvania. Good to have you listening in Erie today, and throughout southern Ontario, Toronto, and beyond. 8 million potential listeners in our area. I wish we could get them to all tune in, because this is going to be a fabulous conversation with Dan Cohen of Music and Memory. I met him a couple years ago at an Alzheimer's symposium here in Western New York. Was fascinated by the things he was talking about. And Dan, good to have you with us on Lifeline. Appreciate you taking the time to be here.
Great. Thanks for having me, Neil. Glad to be here.
Well, listen, there's... I'm not even going to try to describe what you do, because there's so many aspects to it. But you're sitting on an airplane and somebody says, "What do you do for a living?" How do you describe it in your elevator speech?
Sure. I mean, really, we're taking music and using it in ways that people don't typically think about. Many of us love music, but for people who decline cognitively or they're more isolated, music can really be very helpful. It's amazing that for someone with dementia or Alzheimer's disease, as the disease progresses and they have pretty advanced dementia, they may lose the ability to even recognize their family members or stop speaking. But when they hear music from their youth, it just helps reconnect with them, and they come alive and wake up and start speaking with people very often. And that's the power of this thing. So really... Music and Memory is really promoting this as a concept within nursing homes and assisted living and other health settings around the country and abroad.
Did you stumble on that, or, I mean, how did you make the connection?
Stumble is really very accurate. So I'm a social worker, but I actually have a career in technology companies. And in 2006, I was listening to the radio one day, and I heard a journalist talk about how iPods are ubiquitous. They're everywhere. And I thought, well, you know, young people have them mostly, a number of us are older adults. But in any kind of nursing home, it just didn't seem plausible that people would really have their own music. And so I called up. I live on Long Island in New York. I called up a nearby county nursing home, and I said, "I know music's already your number one recreational activity. You have live music. You have a lot of group singing. But can we see if there would be any added value if we were to totally personalize, individualize music for each person?" Mm-hmm. And they said, "Sure, come on in." I went in with my laptop and a few iPods, and it was just, you know, wham, just an instant hit with the residents.
When you say personalized, were you talking to family members to say, "Can you tell me about their favorite songs or the genre of music they used to listen to?" Like, how are you getting your info?
Sure. So if people are able to tell us, certainly we'll ask. But if they're unable to communicate their preferences, what they love, we'll speak to their family. We'll speak to even staff. If somebody's been in a facility for years, they kind of maybe know, they've seen what they respond to. So that's the trick. But the challenge is that actually there are 1.6 million people in the U.S. living in nursing homes. Half of them never, ever, ever get a visitor from anybody. Combine that with there's a couple of time and motion studies that were done in two New York City nursing homes, which showed that 90% of a nursing home resident's time on average is spent idle. So if I'm in a nursing home and my friends and family aren't visiting me, and I'm sitting around most of the day waiting for something interesting to happen, that's a recipe for decline, even if your physical status is stable. So that's kind of the background that we're working with.
Pretty sad, actually, to hear those numbers, but encouraged to know that it's having a positive impact. I saw some of the movies or videos or documentaries that you showed as a part of the symposium you did. I mean, you were part of the symposium for the Alzheimer's Association here, but you were talking about it. I mean, the videos were astounding. If anybody has ever seen the movie Awakenings, where at one point people applied some kind of a drug to these folks who were basically in a vegetative state, and they came back to life. Nobody ever figured out why that worked or whatever. It's a fascinating story told in the movie Awakenings. This is similar but different, of course. But you see the same kind of impact, because some of the, from my recollection, some of the people were completely non-communicative. They were basically almost asleep or seemed checked out of the program. And all of a sudden, they came to life. Some got up and started dancing.
It is pretty amazing. You know, we do have these stories come in pretty regularly, you know, and you never know when it's going to happen. Everybody responds differently to music. People are so, you know, sort of when you use the term checked out, you know, again, they're maybe in pain. They've got things wrong with them. It's like, you know, I give up. It's kind of how people feel. God take me, people will say, right? And when they hear their music, and sort of failure to thrive is sort of the official term. I give up. I'm not going to eat anymore. I'm just going to fade. But when they hear music, oh, this reminds me when I met my wife, or this reminds me, you know, whatever, better days and having a good time, and I'm enjoying the music, because music connects with our emotional system. So even though someone may be have no short-term memory left, and with advanced dementia, their emotional system is actually still very much functional. And when we the music we love is not an intellectual decision. Oh, I like that song we're playing now. No, it's a gut feel thing. You just respond to it. You know, yeah. And so that part still exists. Doesn't matter how much your cognition is declined. So that's what we're reaching to. That we're connecting with the parts of the brain and our sense of self that's still functional. And that's why we can sort of we see things happening with people that stop speaking or stop moving or stop relating to others, stop relating to family. They're confused. They get agitated. You know, the number one reason, you know, very often people tell their moms and dads, I'll take care of you. I'll keep you home. I'll take care of you. But then one day, sometimes with dementia, people get agitated or frustrated. They may strike out physically. They say, well, but Mom, I told you, I promised you I'd keep you home, but I can't anymore. I'm going to find you a nice place, right? Mm-hmm. But the music can help calm very much. And so that will help very often people stay at home. Because then it'll be easier for the family and the caregiver. And so, you know, there are a number of big wins along the way just from something as simple as the right music.
In layman's terms, can you help us understand why it works? Like, what is it about the brain and the connection that's made with music?
You know, I think the most elementary way to describe this is just that, you know, other senses, our vision, our sense of smell, when it just lights up very small parts of the brain. But when we listen to music that we're enjoying, much of the brain lights up. So here's, you know, going back to that functionality. So some parts of the brain may be, you know, deteriorated, but other parts of the brain are still very much in place. And so that's what's working. It's taking advantage of what is rather than our focusing, zeroing in on, well, look what's not working. They can't remember what I just told them, right? Well, that's, you know, many of us have sort of memory slippage earlier on. I certainly do. But as it gets worse, it doesn't mean that you're still not there. People are still there, you know, throughout their dementia, the decline, their character, the personality. They just can't often remember things, and there are other factors to the disease, and everybody's progression might vary because there are many different forms of dementia. But the music just often is sort of a very likely way to give people enjoyment, pleasure, because as they're declining, you know, even as you're beginning, I once was reading a blog post by somebody who says, you know, I have, he's describing himself, I have dementia, and I'm sort of, I've described this early onset, but sometimes I'll look in the mirror, I won't know who's there. And he's writing all about that. But the music will help people keep their sense of self, their sense of identity, this is who I am. And it also facilitates interaction with others. This song reminds me of such and such, it prompts, it facilitates relationship and helps maintain them. So when people, pulls people out of their shell, so to speak, it's another one of the big benefits of connecting people with the music that they love. Now, the tricky part here is it's not a matter of just identifying someone's favorite genre of music. Oh, yeah, Dad, he loves country. Let's put together a couple hundred country music songs. No, that's not good enough. It's just for any of us. If any of your listeners would think, well, okay, pick out a favorite genre of music that you love, and then write down, let's say, your top five favorite musicians or groups. and then go to someone you know well or don't know well and say, here's my favorite genre of music. I want you to guess my top five musicians or groups. And how likely is it that they'll be able to guess your top five?
Yeah.
And I've done this with groups. It's almost impossible. So, you know, we assume because we know someone's genre that we'll guess right, but it just isn't that way. So we really have to do the work of learning, you know, well, what groups do you really like? And then set them up for our family members while they're even home and healthy or if they're not healthy. But this is an amazing gift for anyone in your family who is suffering physically, cognitively, or just alone. They're fine physically and cognitively, but there's a lot of alone time and depression maybe, and just, you know, help them get their own music and figure out how best to use it. Make it easy, you know, single button, yeah. Kind of turn on, turn off.
My dad, since the time I met you, my dad was diagnosed with dementia and is now in a skilled nursing facility. He's not officially called an Alzheimer's patient, or for a while they thought it could have been Lewy body. Nothing official in terms of an actual diagnosis yet, but he has dementia, the point I'm trying to make. And he can still communicate, and yet he doesn't always communicate about the right things. Like, you know, I could be talking to him about the weather or about upcoming sporting event or something, and he'll be on the same page for a minute, but then all of a sudden he'll be talking about, you know, making some kind of a real estate deal, and it's completely non-germane to the conversation, and he's usually making things up as though he's still involved actively in selling real estate and stuff. So, you know, but he's got, the point being, he's got the ability to communicate. But I would be curious to know how this would impact him. However, there are people that live in his same facility on his same floor that have lost all ability to communicate. And if I'm hearing you correctly, it's not so much how well you can still communicate in either case. Are you saying that music can still reach the soul, so to speak?
Yes.
Wow.
So this is, you know, for helping the mood, even helping with clarity sometimes, right? You know, it's not a cure. It's not going to do away with the disease, but it does help stabilize sort of one's interaction with the world a little bit, because it's using more parts of the brain that are still working, and it does tap those parts of the person that work. And people love to see the a little bit more of Mama Dad is back. You know, oh, here they are, right? Because they're going to say something or get into the music and start singing where they might have been not saying a word before, and then people can relate on that level, right? And remember this and remember that, and we can talk stories with people. So it is that mood enhancer. It does help get through the day. It does help for this enjoyment piece, and pleasure is what people, I think, to a great degree lose. They don't like... you know, it's like this gentleman who couldn't recognize himself in the mirror. And, you know, he was like just anxious, worried, because he was seeing what's happening to him, to himself. And but the music helps to relax people, distract them, because it gets so bundled up in sort of like all the things that come to mind. You know, because it's not all of a sudden you've lost a great deal of your memory. It's a gradual process over years.
Be interested to see what you have to say about, you know, where we go from here, because there are ways that folks can get involved and even support the work that you're doing, learn more about the kind of work you're doing, and perhaps apply some of it in their own situation. The organization itself, I assume, with a extension like ORG, are you not for profit?
That's correct. We're a 501c3, you know, meaning officially we're
right.
Not for profit.
Okay, so I want to make that clear, because there's opportunities here. If you want to support the organization and what they're doing, you certainly can give. There was even a time, I don't know if you're still doing it, but you were asking people for old iPods, that kind of thing. I don't know. Do you still do that?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, absolutely, we do. In fact, right on our website, people can print out a prepaid label. And just slap it onto an envelope if they have an old iPod, an old but working. We'll turn that around and give it to a nonprofit nursing home or whatever.
Okay, so let's talk about how this works then in terms of, well, there's the immediate need. Like somebody might say, well, my parent has Alzheimer's or dementia or something, and I would really love to see them benefit from this kind of information. So like you might say, well, here's the steps you should take. But on the proactive side too, wouldn't it make sense? I mean, sometimes people will make a video when they know they're diagnosed with a terminal illness or something. They'll make a video for a loved one, and they may not end up viewing it for 3 years because the person may live for a period of time, but then they find it, they get a chance to see it. And I'm just thinking, you know, if your parents are in their 70s or something, they may be doing really well right now. I don't know how many people could actually name their parents' favorite song, you know, the one that brings tears to their eyes and that kind of thing. And I think probing around a little bit and asking them some of those questions and writing it down would be valuable, because if they ever are in a situation like you're describing, you'd know right off which songs would reach their soul, so to speak. Am I off base, or does that kind of make sense to me?
It's really so important, because many of the 1.6 million people in nursing homes today in the U.S., the day before they went in, didn't realize that they were going to end up in a nursing home for the rest of their life. You know, falls are just so common. Nope, sorry, you can't go back home, and that's it. And so if their condition has deteriorated and they can't, you know, tell you, or somebody has a stroke, or they get a concussion, and and that results in their inability to speak. We want to have that information now. That's why, while people can speak, not only my father-in-law, for instance, he was home and healthy, and I had his 200 song list, and he had headphones, had a little speaker, and he just enjoyed it at home, healthy. And then when he had a heart attack, boom, in the hospital, well, the music was there for him. So as he's sitting there all day and testing him, this and that, he was having a good time listening to the music. And then from there, he went to a nursing home, and he sort of bounced around 8 or 9 places over the course of the year. He went to hospice and then passed. But everywhere, every place he went, he wasn't just sitting around watching the TV, which is, when you're in the hospital, it doesn't really offer very much most of the time. Mm-hmm. And especially for people with dementia in a hospital, have, the TV on, and, war scenes and whatever, it's all just not helpful. And so it had multiple effects. Yes, it helped improve his mood. He wasn't an ornery guy because he was not where he wanted to be. And because he was in a better mood, certainly staff was this helped staff be had a more cooperative patient, so they were in a better mood. And of course, we as family loved that he had his music and was in a better mood when we visited him. So it had all of these sort of ripple effects.
I don't know if you saw this YouTube video. I mean, there's a billion of them out there, so the chances of you seeing the one I'm describing, I don't know. But there's a video I saw of a young girl. I would guess she was 15 or 16. And she was with her grandmother, who I would say was probably in the 80 to 85 range, but looked quite elderly, and kind of staring off into space, non-communicative. And the young girl knew that her grandmother had loved to sing. So she began singing a cappella to her grandmother, some classic hymn of the Christian faith, I think, and I don't remember exactly which one it was, but she had a beautiful voice, but she was just singing to her grandma. And as she got through the various verses, you could see her grandmother beginning to come to life. And by the last verse, her grandmother started singing with her. And she hadn't spoken in months or years. I mean, it was one of those kind of miracle things. And here were the words to the song coming out of her grandma's soul as she was singing. And it was a tear-jerking kind of video. I don't know if you've seen that one particularly, but I think you've probably seen similar things happen as a result of the music and memory link.
Well, that's a great example. And yes, look, hymns, so any religious music, look how far back it goes to everybody. It's just as soon as people are just, when they're tiny, this is what the family and church, this is in their core, right? So it's not a question of, do I remember something? No, automatically they're going to remember it. Now, the question is, if somebody's, 80, 90 years old, who's going to know which hymn is going to connect with them? And,
right.
Is somebody going to try different hymns and see? Or, this is all part of that. We call it being a music detective. We have to figure out, which hymns, which Broadway tunes, maybe patriotic songs, but did they sing in a chorus or a choir? Did they sing at home? Did their parents sing with them? Did they sing together around the kitchen table? Do they play a musical instrument? The movie Gone with the Wind? Maybe the theme song, will really resonate with them. What was the music at their, high school prom or at their wedding? It was a wedding song. So we have all of these opportunities to identify songs that hold meaning. So it's the trick here, it's kind of when people are still pretty functional. When we learn what songs they are, then if we ask our family members, well, what does that remind you of? I used to hang out with my friends and we'd go here and go there, and that's what it reminds me of. And then should they fade more and they don't, when they hear the song, you can remind them, yes, remember, yeah, this song, this is when you were hanging out with your friends and you went to the beach or whatever it was. And it facilitates, again, that sort of you're extending the life of positive interaction between you and your loved one.
Yeah, and that's just so precious. I mean, you can't imagine the look that was on that young girl's face when her grandma started singing. And it was just indicative, I think, of the idea that there's an opportunity to reconnect with people who hadn't been able to connect for a long time. And one of the things, Dan, that most intrigued me about the Alzheimer's Association was when I first became familiar with them, and my daughter was actually working with them a number of years ago. She's a social worker, but a stay-at-home mom currently. They were doing the walk to end Alzheimer's, and I showed up that first year. My daughter invited us out just to walk. We weren't directly involved. We just came and participated in the walk. And it rained, like monsoon kind of rain. And they were expecting, like 3,000 or 4,000 people to show up, and still 2,500 to 3,000 showed up. And it was incredible turnout in spite of the rain. Astounding turnout, actually. And I remember thinking, good Lord, what in the world is causing all of these people to come out in this kind of rain? And I realized it was love, that they were here to walk for a friend or a loved one who had been affected by this disease. And, love is kind of contagious. And so I think people want to be around that kind of atmosphere. And what you're describing here, I mean, the kind of thing that you do, it's got to be pretty gratifying, even personally for you, because you're giving people renewed hope by allowing them to reconnect, even if it's for a few moments, with loved ones, or to see their loved ones connect emotionally to something outside of themselves, and man, when you've just watched mom or dad fade over the years, to see love come back alive like that, for a short period of time, is kind of amazing.
It is very humbling, and it is, and for all of your listeners, to see it is to believe it. It's sort of, in words is one thing, and seeing it is another. In fact, when I started doing this, and I was getting these great reactions from people, and then I tell my friends, because I was doing it as a volunteer when I started doing this, and they go, oh, how, Dan, you're bringing the old people music. I go, no, you don't get it. I'm saying there's something significant here, something that's more than just nice. And I said, no, people were all experts on music, right? We all have all had music our whole lives, and so to have a different sort of somebody tell you something different about what music does, it was not really received well. And so I said, I got to get some of this filmed. And so I found a filmmaker for an afternoon. They come in with me, and that became a video of Henry, which ended up being the most viewed video on anything related to Alzheimer's or dementia globally. Now it's been viewed 60 million times. And so I instantly, as in 2012, got emails from all over the country, all over the world. And I think the reason it really struck a chord, I guess pun intended, was that, people are pretty hopeless. There's no cure for the disease. It's all we hear is bad news stories about it. The numbers are increasing. The costs are great. And so there's hope here. And so that's what this is. This was, there was something, there is something we can do. In addition to, we hear, this tremendous effort for the cure, and we have to find a cure, and that's paramount. But in the meantime, the disease lasts, on average, people live 8 years with the disease from diagnosis, and there are more than 5 million people with the disease. Every 8 years, there's another 5 million people. And so this is one simple act we can take to improve their lives while they're here, and that not be 100%, we're going for the cure, but nobody's paying attention to, and many people are, I don't mean nobody, but where the money's going is towards the cure, and it's got to be, and all we want is sort of crumbs off the table, because then we could reach a lot of people very cost effectively. So Music and Memory is now running in 4,800 locations.
Wow.
Every state in the U.S., all across Canada. I mean, there are more than 100 around in southern Ontario. There are 159 in the state of New York. I forgot how many in Pennsylvania. You mentioned Pennsylvania. Many in Pennsylvania, maybe 100. But we're only 2% there. So I look at it, wow, this is great, but my goal is, that means so out of every 100 people in a nursing home, in terms of going back to people being idle, if you have 100 people sitting idle, you know, or maybe two of them are active, and, well, we got 98 to go still. So that's why we really, embrace the public support.
Right.
And getting people, donations, getting them the music, getting them trained, because it's different levels of how people can sort of do this. I mean, number one, at home on our website, there's a free download of a guide how to set up a personalized playlist for your loved one at home. So you can just go to musicandmemory.org and download that, and it just says how to do it. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, I just want to bring up the question of, like, the church or faith community in general, whether it's a local synagogue or church or whatever. A lot of times, I mean, when I was a pastor, where I was involved there, we had a monthly outreach to a senior center and would go in and spend time with the folks working on crafts. We would usually teach some kind of a Bible story, but, sing songs with them and stuff. I'm just wondering, because, I mean, there are tens of thousands of churches in North America. If you sense that there's any way that church groups could become trained or at least aware of what's going on and participate in doing some of the same kind of things you're talking about at community centers.
So the exact situation you described of, going into the senior center, mm-hmm. and spending time with the folks. So that does happen. There are it's more of a one-off here and there. Churches that are involved, maybe they were already going in monthly, and now they've adopted the music to have something else to do, mm-hmm. right? As when they visit,
right?
And so the many levels, there are every denomination of health settings, sort of running different health settings around the country. Mm-hmm. But there has been no yet sort of effort to say, okay, let's all approach this together. And that would be a welcome initiative, right? So this is a problem. Our elders are really the most voiceless now. If you have dementia and you're old, you can't, you don't have your short-term memory. You're mm-hmm. viewed as kind of, I guess, an outcast by some people.
Mm-hmm.
Young people have a bit of a phobia towards old, it's that ageism, plus now they also have the disease. And so, when I mentioned in the beginning that half the people never ever get a visitor, it doesn't mean they don't have family or friends. It's just people give up visiting. Oh, they're being taken care of. I don't need to visit, which is absolutely just the opposite. No, they do need you to visit, because just because you have a roof over your head doesn't mean you have a fulfilled spiritual life with connection to people and mm-hmm. you're happy, right? So
right.
You have to have that. You want to maintain your connection with family and community. And so, we need that. So it's a combination of, it's not just getting people the music, but it's getting people to bring the music and spend time. I mean, so we have many high schools and colleges. We have music and memory chapters on different college campuses or in different high schools where the students go in maybe once a week or twice a week as volunteers or as part of their curriculum and spend time with people. And the young people say, this is the best thing I ever did, helping this person light up. I mean, that's sort of my two words, just that phrase.
Sure.
I mean, just picture that, people lighting up. And so it's a wonderful thing. And so we really want to change the dynamic of the community avoiding, again, not everybody avoids, but if, when it comes to young people in schools, in my community, I can never get a parking space in any of the schools' parking lots or on the street, but I can always get a parking space, in any kind of elder care facility. So let's take more of that love, let's give the same love to our elders and love and resources as we are to our children and young people. And so that's kind of our goal. And as somebody described, it's interesting that the largest public hospital system in the U.S. is running Music and Memory throughout its hospitals, and that's in New York City. We have 7 major hospitals under the umbrella of the New York City Health and Hospitals Corporation using it with patients in all different scenarios and rehabilitation, help them be motivated to get better quicker and to be able to walk, or people who have mental illness, and it's helping them enormously to calm down, to be more in touch with themselves. Even people with schizophrenia don't hear voices. We hear reported time and again when they're listening to their music, or people who are depressed or highly anxious. And so it's just really interesting. It's helping people. On PBS NewsHour a couple weeks ago, there was a piece about people, apparently, if people who are in a coma, half the time doctors misdiagnose their level of consciousness. But with music, and this was showing, that music can really help people improve their consciousness even in a coma and help them come out of a coma. So anyway, so getting back to the how, volunteering on any level in the community, I mean, on our website, under About Us, we have a care organization map, and you just zoom in on the map of your community, and you can see which facilities are looking for volunteers or are in your area. Donations to Music and Memory helps us. It's highly leveraged because then centrally we're able to help these thousands of places strengthen their programs, reach more people, and train more organizations. And we want to also, because of the success with the hospitals, not only in New York, it turns out in Australia, the largest hospital system, also uses Music and Memory thoroughly in like 40 different departments. Senior centers, adult day programs, nursing homes, assisted living facilities, home care programs, and hospitals, all of these use Music and Memory. And our goal is to have music follow people through the healthcare system. So if they're home and they have their music, whatever happens to them, just like my father, well, the music will follow them, and that will be, families will find, oh, gee, this is great. You know, this has been such a wonderful addition that we set up, and we did learn their music now, early, and this has just reaped all sorts of benefits, later, actually. The question is, it doesn't work with everybody. If we can't figure out what someone's favorite music is, what music holds personal meaning, it's not going to work. So we have to figure that out. Yeah, and that's why the sooner we ask, the earlier we ask, the more likely we'll be successful. If we wait too long, then it's just harder. It's more guesswork.
Love your passion, and I love the vision that, like, you've barely scratched the surface, and as this thing gains more traction, I think you're going to enjoy incredible success in this outreach and work and ministry and whatever you officially call it. But Music and Memory is where, musicandmemory.org is where you can learn more about all of this, including donating, not just financially, but used iPods, new iPods, whatever they're needed. There's all kinds of opportunities for you to get involved in some of the community groups he's talking about and volunteer opportunities throughout the country. So musicandmemory.org. And you mentioned even Southern Ontario. You've got stuff going on there, too. So there's a lot of listeners we've got north of the border in the greater Toronto area and beyond. They're going to be interested in this. Any final word you want to leave with us, Dan?
No, I just feel free to, everybody, this program depends on everybody being their own local champion. You champion this concept with your family, with the facilities, maybe if you have a loved one in a nursing home or in a hospital, and make it happen. It's hard to bring music to someone and say to the facility, oh, you do it while I'm not here. They won't. Our approach is we do education and training, so we're training the facility on how to make it work for the facility-wide for everybody there. Trying it, there's nothing to lose. There's no downside. The worst-case scenario doesn't work. But if it works, it can work really well. The upside is there. I would say, and feel free to contact us, through the website. Say you want to talk to me, and I'll be glad to get back to anybody and just talk this through.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for taking time to be here. And Dan, God bless you and your work. Love to get you back at some point in the future and see how things are going, but we'll continue talking about Music and Memory in the days ahead and remind folks what you're doing. By the way, that video you mentioned of Henry, if we can find that, we're going to post it on our Facebook page, if that's okay, and a link for musicandmemory.org as well to make it easier for people in case they forget.
So I guess the last thing is the short video clip that I mentioned is sort of a precursor to Alive Inside, the name of a movie, a documentary that won the Sundance Audience Award, which means 4,000 U.S. documentaries submitted, and the 50,000 people attending Sundance picked Alive Inside, the story of Music and Memory, as their favorite inspirational movie. And so you can be rented on iTunes. I think it's on YouTube, where you pay a little rental. If people want to buy the DVD, they can get it on Amazon for $14. I mean, so that is it's a great film to watch with your family intergenerationally, and to prompt discussion around this. It is people call it the best documentary they've ever seen. So I just want to let people know.
Yeah, thanks. And what's the name of it again?
Alive Inside. Alive Inside.
Alive Inside. All right. Thanks so much, Dan. God bless you. And have a great weekend. Take care. Bye-bye.
Okay, thank you, Neil.
Bye-bye. Dan Cullen, founder, executive director of Music and Memory. You'll find him online at musicandmemory.org.